Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Bowlology Report. Damien Fleming here. Plenty of news in cricket. Probably the biggest overnight. Jimmy Anderson, 600 test wickets. Can you believe it? But joining me as always, co-host Peter Hanscom. Pete, thanks for joining us again. Mate, what's been happening with the Victorian cricket team last couple of weeks?
Last few weeks we've managed to get outdoors, which has been huge for us, especially this time of year. Groundsmen always in Melbourne seem to tell us that we can't get on turf wickets in August, but we've just proven every groundsman wrong. So we're out there. It's been great. You know, the fast bowlers off a long run, getting ready for the season to come, and batters just trying to survive and just get through the session. So no, it's been good, mate. Still training. Three days a week. On those same days, we do a bit of gym and then we just run from home. So it's been good.
So really, you might be able to, obviously in the nets, but you might get some practice matches internally. So you'd hope as best as possible, you know, you're progressing on the incline, ready for some domestic cricket.
Yeah, no, we're progressing nicely. And the beauty about being at the Junction Oval and having access to that is, you know, now that we've got the turf wickets, hopefully we can get a turf wicket, a turf centre wicket, which would be absolutely huge, and get a couple of practice inter squad games going. It should be a bit warmer than we normally used to go down to Wesley College in Glen Waverley for our practice games, and that was the coldest place on earth for whatever reason. You'd drive in from the road and it would drop about 8 degrees. Poor David Hussey hated it there. So
that'll be good. My kids go to school, so.
Oh, right. So you know. There you go.
So we rug them up. Yeah. Michael Beers, the head of cricket, your ex-Stars teammate. We'll have to get Beery on one day.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he can tell us some funny stories, mate. He's a good man.
Was he naturally grumpy man at the Stars?
Naturally grumpy. I think that's just his demeanour. It was the same when he was at the Saints as well. He was obviously there when I first went to St Kilda, and Beery would always try and start a fight in the nets for some reason. I'm like, mate, we're teammates. Like, what's going on here? What have I done to you? But no, that's just him. He gets in the competition, absolutely loves it. So,
he's a beauty. He's doing well, but it's interesting, these spinners who were former fast bowlers, they retain that fast bowler mentality, don't they?
If Beery was ever a fast bowler, mate, I'll run to China. He doesn't have the body to be a fast bowler. He's got upside down legs. So I think spin was the right option for him.
So no fast twitch fibres that you could find?
No, I mean, you've seen him in the field, mate. We try and hide him at 45 or short third man or something and just hope the ball doesn't go to him.
And he provided, he was very, very shrewd in his fielding. It's something I did in my last few years when I couldn't move much at all. They try and hide you at 45, you know, behind the wicket. Don't try and just dive.
Yep.
Just dive. So if you miss it, you don't have to sprint and go get it, blah, blah. It's four. And then every third one, you just jump on and stop.
Yeah, and then you look like a genius as well, because you've actually stopped one that, you know, people thought that you weren't going to actually get to.
All right, mate, let's get into it, because there's been a lot of the cricket, but it's time for Pete's What are we calling it?
Some massive news week.
News round.
Yeah, let's do it. It's a couple of weeks worth of news. So
actually,
news fortnight.
News week with Pete Hanscom.
Succinct. What I want to start off, mate, we'll go over to England. We'll start off with the tests. We didn't get to report on the second test last week, but to be perfectly fair, we didn't miss much.
Rain.
Stock standard English summer. Just rained. So that game. Unfortunately, ended in a draw, one sort of innings each. Couple of mentions, honourable mentions, Rizwan and Crawley, both 50-plus runs. Quality batting from both of them. But I think the big issue that sort of came out of that one, Flem, you might like to talk about this, is the light and how much that played an effect. And it always seems like such a contentious issue. Bowlers want to stay on, and it's like, no, you can see the ball, and batters are giving it the, I don't want to get hit in the head, and it's really hard to find that middle ground. I don't know how you felt on it.
There was no better feeling as a quicker bowler getting that second new ball in fading light to tailenders.
Yeah.
Like for me, that was just the perfect scenario, and just hope that you get two or three overs before you went off.
Yeah,
particularly if you had a couple of early wickets, you could sneak in a fifer there. But I was listening to a lot of podcasts, you know, BBC and Tuffers and Borney over there in England, and there was really no definitive answer. You'd probably know better than me, Pete. They did say the standard of lighting, you know, was so different in each test venue. You know, they tend to think that the Australian lights are the best, and that some of the counties will have to invest more in lights, but there's still got to be that commitment to play, even when it's artificial light.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess our venues are used to playing a lot more night games, especially with AFL being played on most of them as well. So the lights got to be good. It's a lot of money for county grounds to fork out. I think it's a worthwhile investment. You've got to get into it. We need to be able to play during some dark times, get the lights on there. It's just when it gets dangerous. And I think the dangerous spots, Flem, for me, if you're at gully or point or square leg and you get a cut shot or a pull shot, you're not seeing it. That's when it gets bloody scary. Like if you're the batter, you've got the sight screen behind and the lights are fixed basically to you. The slips are okay, but yeah, that square of the wicket fielding position, that can be proper scary when it starts to get dark.
Yeah, and I suppose the other push it could be is for more day-night test matches.
Yep. Yeah. Keep the crowds interested, mate. Keep people coming back and watching test cricket.
Pretty good third test though. Once again, by rain, but it was a statistician's smorgasbord.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, plenty going on. We'll start off. Obviously, the England batters, just Crawley, Butler, great work, guys. Like, that's impressive. Crawley, first test 100, bloody awesome. But to go on and make 267... That's just impressive. Following up from his 50 in the previous game, so
can I chuck some stats in,
mate? You're the stat wizard. Go for it.
So it's the second highest debut 100 by an Englishman. So there was a young whippersnapper back in 1903, Tip Foster. It was his first test. He punched out 287.
Not bad.
First test. And it was in Australia.
No worries.
But interesting though, it was the highest score by a batsman that was dismissed stumped.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, a bit of trivia.
Yeah.
There was a West Indian batsman, Seymour Nurse. What a cool name that was. 1969. Great one. Stumped, for, I think, for 258. So highest score for a batsman dismissed stumped.
Lovely, lovely stat there from you, Flem.
But I was thinking, what about all those 300s? I would have thought that was a more common mode of dismissal. You know, you got to 300 and you're playing your shots more. I was expecting a 300 to be a stunt.
Yeah, I mean, you start, spinner comes on, you're like, all right, I'm going to try and hit every ball for six now. Like, I've got 300 runs. I don't really need many more, so let's go for it. But yeah, that's incredible. I agree with you. I think someone surely over 300 should have been stumped, but they're obviously not going hard enough for them.
Yeah. Or not missing them.
Or just not missing them. That's probably helps. And then Pakistan in the dirt there for 154 overs. Nearly got to the third new ball, and there's probably nothing worse in cricket than the third new ball for a fielding side. That can go get stuffed. You may as well stay with the old ball and keep it nice and soft.
It's the most overrated thing in cricket, isn't it? The
third overrated. Yeah, it's not doing much for you. It's just going to the boundary faster. But after a couple of quick wickets, Azhar Ali, beautiful, mate. Just a glorious knock. Captain's knock, 141 not out, carried his bat to the end. It was really good to see as well, because he'd, poor guy, been struggling a little bit, I think, with some runs, and that can be tough, especially when you're the captain, because you're concentrating on a lot of other things as well. You're trying to win the game. You're worried about your bowlers, your own batters, and then on top of that, to have your own batting, be subject to so much scrutiny can really hurt.
I think captaining Pakistan, there's an extra 20% stress level.
Just
extra 20%.
Yep.
I totally agree. He scored a test 300. He's got runs against Australia in Australia.
Yeah, which is impressive.
There was a really worrying stat that he was, Crickbiz showed that, 90% of his dismissals were on a four stump line, good length. So for me, it was like, that's a stock ball for every fast bowler.
That's test cricket right there. top of off, odd sniff. But, I mean, if you make runs before you get out to that good ball, then, fingers crossed you're going all right. So that was
circumstances, marvellous knock, great attack.
Yep. Pump for him. And then the attack, Jimmy Anderson just doing what he's doing, mate. 5 for 56 in that first innings to get himself to 598 test wickets. And in that innings, there were a couple of drops as well. And you could see Jimmy just really want to unleash on some of his fielders because he obviously knew how close he was. But that was a great moment when that came last night. Yeah. 600 test wickets, the first quick ever to do that, which is amazing because that just shows how much cricket he's actually played as well, and the ability just to keep backing it up and different situations, wickets all over the globe. Just bloody impressive, mate. And fourth wicket taker overall. Oh,
yeah, and it's just a credit to his skill. I mean, you've faced him, numerous times. Fluency of action, athleticism, but then resilience and durability is the biggest one for me, because I talked about before, first day of cricket I went to, Dennis Lilly broke the record for most wickets, 310. Like, Jimmy's almost doubled that. And then, Richard Hadley and Ian Botham and Kapil Dev, it kept just drip feeding up. Courtney Walsh got to 500, but now he's got his mate Broadie and McGrath and Jimmy at home. You'd think that he could play at least another year in those conditions. But, for me, it's just it's such a big credit. I remember speaking to Ryan Harris No, just about a few things. And he's just picked up a job in the IPL, hasn't he? Bowling coach at Delhi.
And oh, there you go.
You know, how hard a work, even for fast medium bowlers, you know, all that body weight going through each ball. And there was sort of a point, I did some research, particularly in Australian quicks. If you got to 50 tests,
yep,
you know, you were part of an elite. And then when it hit 70, you know, McDermott and Mitch Johnson and Brett Lee, you know, that was almost the top line until McGrath.
Yeah, exactly.
But these blokes, you know, Jimmy, they're well and truly over 100 tests, aren't they?
Yeah. I guess the only saving grace there maybe for Jimmy being in England helps, because the Australian wickets compared to English wickets, the Australian wickets are a lot harder. And you really have to run in to try and get something out of the wicket. Whereas Jimmy, you know, credit to him and his durability, but being able to just run in, use that juke ball, some good wickets over there as well for him. But just that softer landing, like I've spoken to fast bowlers that I've played with, and the difference there between the two countries in terms of the wickets and what it feels like on your body, it was a big difference for them.
Oh, I think that's massive. And particularly the drop-ins in Australia.
Yeah. They're just getting harder and harder on the body, the poor guys. That's tough. A lot of, and then they don't break up for the fast bowlers either, so you don't get the ones that shoot or take off. So, but that's a whole nother story, Flynn.
Yes.
But no, great work to the English boys. While we're in England, just a couple of honourable mentions in county cricket. His teammates call him Ian, but his friends call him the Duck. Ian Holland taking his first-class five for Hampshire versus Surrey. Just great. He's one of my mates. I absolutely love him. It's an interesting story with him as well. Like, he came in, played half a Shield game for Victoria. That was his one and only first-class match in Australia. I think he came in as a replacement player. And he's then taken the plunge with an English passport to go and play in England as a local. And it's just great to see the rewards paying off. And they gave him the new ball, which is great. And I think he's a chance to really, you know, have a long career over there. He's almost 30. So, you know, if he keeps going like a Darren Stevens, he's got about 14 or 15 years left.
But Ian's, you know, he's a dominant district player, wasn't he?
Yes.
For Ringwood. But, you know, bowling-wise, he's more Jimmy Anderson than Pat Cummins, isn't he? Banging the head there. But he's that, you know, handy bat. Been playing for America as well. I mean, they're great stories. And, you know, we often see guys, you know, had that opportunity to finish off. Steve McGoffin. I don't know if you're going there, but Michael Hogan, I don't know if you played against.
Yeah. Hogan's my favourite batter of all time.
Just why? Just pure slogging or?
Just would come in, number 11, first ball, try and hit it for six. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yep.
To the point where Cameron White was my captain at the time. Hogan would walk out and Whitey would go, Hogan's what, deep point and long on? And Hogan's like, yep, that's about right. First ball, whack, straight down deep point's throat. And it was just like, that was one of my first years. I'm like, this is great. I love first class cricket.
That sounds like tail enders from the 60s and 70s. That's the way they batted. But,
no,
you know, Oakes, he just took his 600 first class wicket. He didn't debut in first class cricket till he was 28.
Oh, wow. That's impressive going. And there you go. There's that durability as well, being over in England.
So, and without playing for Australia, those type of bowlers, and McGoffin, who didn't play for Australia, really good Shield bowlers.
Yeah. You know, oh, yeah. I made my debut against McGoffin and he cut me in half for fun. So, yeah, those guys were very, very impressive in Australia and they've been amazing over in England. But moving on, back home, Flem, there was a couple of coaching gigs up for grabs. And they've both been filled since a couple of weeks ago. One was the Saka, and that has been filled by a Saka ex-player in Dizzy Gillespie, the local hero. It'd be close to the King of Adelaide, I think, old Dizzy. They love him there.
Of course, living in Queensland, I think Diz has got that. And for the fast bowling cartel, that's just another implant from the board members there, McGrath and Casper and co. So yeah. I really hope Victoria's gone the same way. Was Mervyn Hughes in the last four or five? Mickey Lewis, did he want to step up from bowling coach? Please tell me there was a fast bowler in that last three or four spots.
Unfortunately, Flem, the coaching spots were up for grabs by a few batsmen. Albeit Victorian, ex-Victorian batsmen though. So, but the one that won out, announced today, funnily enough, Chris Bucky Rogers.
The Bowlology Report's own.
I'm sorry?
The Bowlology Report's own.
Exactly right. We found him first. We got him out there and Victoria have gone, I like what he's about. We'll have a bit of that.
So was that episode part of the job interview? Did they just play it?
Well, yeah, funny. I don't think Bucky knew that, but they've obviously picked it up, watched it intently and gone, yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about. Let's get him as our coach.
So, okay, that's our first appointment then.
Yeah. Oh. So if you want a gig, get on board.
Okay, we might see if we can get next guest a coaching gig somewhere. But when does Bucky start?
I think he's going to come in this Friday, so in a couple of days, just to have a chat to the boys, say g'day to everyone, introduce himself to the youngsters that probably don't know him, but officially starts next Tuesday with the group, and that's going to be great for him. He's obviously a world-class player, and he's done a fair bit of coaching since he retired as well, so I'm pumped to have him on board. He's a good mate of mine, and you know, I think we're going to work well together, and I think he's going to work really, really well with our young squad, especially.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a progression for him. He was moving that way. Probably time to have your own team. So good luck, Bucky.
Yeah, good luck. And staying in Australia, just a little bit of good news that's sort of come out in a world of some sort of crap news recently. Flem, Laura Harris, the Queensland and Brisbane Heat player, has married her partner, Delissa Kamintz, the Australian and T20 World Cup winner. So just wanted to share a bit of love, Flem, get that, you know, get those positive vibes out into the world, and good luck to the girls. I think that's awesome.
How many people, did you say it was in Queensland? Were they allowed to have a full-on wedding?
I'm assuming it was in Queensland. And I think they had quite a good gathering, which I'm insanely jealous of, because I've seen the same three people for the last 4 weeks, Flem. And it's starting to get to me, but that's okay.
To talk to you, Pete.
It's been beautiful, mate. But moving on, Flem, and this is probably, you know, outside COVID, this is probably the story of the year. MS Dhoni retiring from international cricket. I think India stopped everything. Just people crying in the streets. It was amazing. But I mean, what a player and what a career. And we're still going to be able to see him play, though, because he's still going to continue with Chennai in the IPL, which is nice. But yeah, sad to see him go. He's an incredible player.
How cool. He's one of the coolest players of all time.
Yeah, the long hair when he came in, just glorious stuff. But what might have been missed, because when you retire on the same day as MS Dhoni, people tend to forget that you've done the same thing, but Suresh Raina, for those who don't know, also retired on the same day. So big shout out to Suresh as well. Raina,
very good white ball cricketer. You know, couldn't adjust to red ball cricket, but, you know, he was a dominant player. But MS Dhoni, like, they also talk about the coolness. you would have seen it heaps, but just the pressure over in India about being the captain, but also the most popular player. So, you know, for our listeners, it's really interesting. You know, all the Indians love their international players and IPL players, but they always seem to still have their favourite player. And for me, in my time, it was from Tendulkar to Dhoni to Kohli.
That's been the transition.
Remember the first time in the IPL? We're in Chennai and I went up the lift. I'm commentating. Went up the lift with a family with all Chennai gear on. So, one, I'm thinking this is working. You know, the fans are buying merchandise. It's packed. We're going up the lift and who's going to win? Well, Chennai against Mumbai Indians. I said, well, who's your favourite player? And to a person, Tendulkar. So it was insane. Yeah. And then there was Dravid and Laxman and all that, but they were nowhere near as famous as Tendulkar. But then I found the progression to Dhoni was so famous, and now it's Kohli. That it's interesting, there doesn't seem to be a second or third in line, banana, it's just those three.
No, they're treated like absolute gods over in India. And I was actually lucky enough, Flem, to play with Dhoni for 1 year in the IPL. Pretty crazy. Ridiculous. Like, you'd get thousands and thousands of people waiting outside our hotel just to get a glimpse of the hotel bus leaving to go to the game. So they might get a glimpse of him sitting in the front seat because that's where he used to sit. Give a little wave and the crowd would go nuts. And this is just in the street, in stock standing street in India. It's just like, this is mental. But I got a nice little story that about Dhoni and my debut. This is my debut in the IPL and we were playing in, what was it? The Pune Super Giants or the Rising Pune Super Giants, extraordinary name. And I get told in the team meeting that I'm going to be making my debut that night, and I'm pumped. I'm like, this is great. I get to play with Dhoni, get to play with some amazing players, and I can't wait to get a few words of wisdom from these guys, a couple of gems, like how to play in India, what to do, how do you hit sixes, all this stuff. So I get announced, and I'm kind of waiting for Dhoni to come up to me and, you know, sort of say congrats as my captain and, you know, good luck for the game, blah, blah, blah. Maybe try and do this. Absolutely nothing. So we get on the team bus. I'm like, all right, maybe something here. Nope, nothing. He's in the zone. Get out there. We start warming up. Still haven't spoken a word to Dhoni. Still nothing. I'm like, oh, come on. This is like, when's something amazing going to come? Anyway, we bat first and I'm batting four, funnily enough, ahead of Dhoni. Which I thought was ridiculous because here I am, this like 74 kilo little stick, trying to hit sixes in the IPL, and there's Dhoni behind me. And so I'm sitting on the bench, he's sitting behind me. We get about to the ninth over, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, we still haven't lost two wickets. I reckon I'm about to get going here. About to have my hit, and I get a tap on the shoulder, and I know it's Dhoni. I'm like, here it is. Here's the wisdom. Like, oh, just going to soak it up. And he goes, Pete, I bat next. And I'm like, oh, no. So he goes in, and then slippery slope for me. I go straight down the batting order. Don't end up actually batting in my debut game for the IPL. And got one sentence off Dhoni, and I was shattered. But after that, I made sure to talk to him and force the conversation so that I could get something from him. So,
what was he like that? Would he just happy to pass on a little bit, or did you have to sort of coax it out of him?
It was a bit more to coax it out of him. I think he was one of those guys where, like, it wasn't for him to go out and do it. I think a lot of players would go to him to try and get some answers. But what he did and what he made quite obvious was that his hotel door was always open.
Yeah.
So you'd be able to go in there. There might be a bit of shisha in the corner or something, and there'd be some PlayStation games going on. And and you could sit in there and sit in silence or have some food or whatever, but it was always open, and that was a really nice touch from him. And you could go in there and maybe get a little bit of something on cricket if you get the right question at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, he was a remarkable player, you know, and also just his image, wasn't it, from Ranchi, you know, which isn't one of the big cities in India. He's riding motorbikes, you know, the Bollywood star virtually, you know, the helicopter shot.
Yeah.
Another underrated thing about Dhoni, I went down to do an interview with him, you know, at the end of the innings, is how quick he was between the wickets.
Rapid.
Like, absolutely, he had this low centre of gravity, powerful legs, but he was lightning between the wickets.
Yep. Yeah. Incredible. And that showed he obviously worked bloody hard getting his body right, getting the right movements for him to have that power. And that also came out in his batting as well. Like, you could see his shots were driven from his legs, and it was, mate, he was impressive. And it showed how hard he worked at his game.
And he was known as the finisher, you know, doing a remarkable job. We had the original finisher in Michael Bevan. Can you see MS Dhoni potentially being on the Masked Singer?
I think that's probably not for MS. I think he's probably doing just fine not to get on the Masked Singer there. But Bevo, he did all right.
He did well. He was the hammerhead. My first book was him holding the microphone with his... Do hammerheads have flippers or...
Fins, flippers,
I thought, geez, what's he doing here? But he's always, in the Australian team, noted for his voice.
Yep.
Love to have a bit of a sing, Bevo. So that was a bit of a win. One thing that didn't work with him... you know, we had a lot of musos in the Australian team, no better than the Lee brothers.
Yep. Yep, they've done well.
They had a band, Six and Out, Gavin Robertson on drums, who's a really good drummer, Richard Cheekwee singing. Cheek's probably had more front than voice. Brad McNamara on lead guitar. Often guys would take guitars on tour. Like, I bought one on an England tour to play with Shane Lee. Probably didn't play it enough. But Bevo, always a bit different. He didn't bring an acoustic guitar. He brought an electronic bass.
Of all things.
You're lugging that around in India. No, everyone wants a nice little sing-along on the acoustic. No one's saying, who's got an electric bass to do a sing-along?
Yeah. Go and slap the bass and give us a riff or something. Like, no, mate. Just... play a couple of chords and let us have a sing.
Yeah, and a sing-along. So, you know, Bevo, just it never quite clicked with Bevo, because, I mean, you see a lot of people doing air guitar. I mean, that, you know, in the crowd when they go around. Yeah. No one does air bass.
No. I wouldn't even say that it's a thing. No.
So, maybe MS Dhoni will keep away from that. That is, what do we call it? Newsweek with Pete.
Yeah, perfect.
Well, Pete, we've had a bit of a theme in the last couple of Bowlology reports, getting Tyson, Goldie and Brett DeLeo to pick their favourite cricket 11s all time. But it is something that cricketers do in the dressing rooms, don't they? We pick our best blokes 11, fat 11, tall 11. If you're a bit bored in the dressing room, it fills in a bit of time.
Especially when there's a bit of rain about as well. It's you've got to think of something, maybe the best dancing 11 or... yeah, it's worst drinkers, stuff like that. But it gets entertaining.
Are you trying to get into the best facial hair 11? This is a debut.
Yeah. Look, it's definitely not getting into the best, but maybe the worst facial hair 11. I'll take that one.
I tell you, he's got great facial hair. He's our next guest, and you can hear him on SAFM in Adelaide, Triple M with Big Ed in Melbourne. A very successful comedian. He's a Hawthorn fan, so he wants to talk cricket today. It's, of course, Anthony Limo. Thanks for joining us on the
report, mate. Hello, Flem. Hello, Pete. Who said dreams don't come true? Huh? Here I am on the Bowlology Report in the middle of lockdown. They said it must be horrible in lockdown. You can't get anything done. You can't do any gigs. You can't get out of the house. And I said that it may all be true, but I can do the Bowlology report. And that has put a spring in my step.
And mate, you're a big cricket today. Fan, and you've and you obviously your favourite cricket of all time, WG Grace, and you're morphing into him.
I started growing this at the start of lockdown, and I've taken nothing off the length. I've trimmed it here though at the sides, because at one point I looked like I'd been stung by 1,000 bees because the hair was out here around the side. I made Santa Claus look anorexic for a while there. So I've had to trim the sides, which has narrowed myself out. The other thing I've done is I've shaved my head.
Oh,
so there you yes.
go. I got bored, and what I've discovered is I've got an island here at the front, and then a moat through there, and then my hair sort of resumes normal proceedings back here. So I don't quite know what I'm going to do with that.
Are you going to quarantine that island or what?
Remember Jason Dunstall had one of these?
Yeah.
And I've threatened my wife. I've said to her, I'm thinking about shaving the back bit here and just growing one tuft down.
Yeah,
like a horn.
Run business at the back.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, mate, flip it around.
We got you on for a theme, Cricket 11. What have you gone for?
I've got two 11s for you. My first 11 is blokes I'd love to have a beer with.
Oh, yeah.
I'm slightly biased towards, and all beers kind of for a few different reasons with these players, which we'll get to. And I'm going to flag before I start that I'm biased towards South Australians, because Pete, growing up in South Australia, we didn't have a lot of representation on the national team. So the players that we did have, we just had a deep, deep love for them. And it didn't matter if they only played a handful of test matches. We bloody loved them. I'm going to give, I'll give this to you. Should we get going? I'll give it to you in batting order.
Yeah, fire it away.
I'm opening the batting with the one and only Rick Darling.
Yes.
A Wakery boy from country South Australia. A flashy opening batsman. I should have looked up his stats before I joined you, but I reckon he played about 20 test matches, Rick Darling. And he played, interestingly, played his last test match when he was 22. So you would have thought he had plenty of cricket left in him.
Wow. Good stat.
And his high score 91, and there is a couple of great stories around Rick Darling. One being that he got hit in the heart by a Bob Willis bouncer at Adelaide Oval. And, Flem, can you remember who revived him? Who was the English player?
John Embry.
John Embry. John Embry, whose birthday is today, just by the way.
Great man.
And I only know that, Pete, because it's my birthday as well.
Happy birthday.
Hey, thank you. I was wondering how much prompting that was going to take, or how deep into the podcast we'd get.
It's not all before about you, Lee. What about the beer 11?
Yes. Well, Rick Darling, my other Rick Darling story, Fleming, you'll love this. One day at Adelaide Oval, because Rick Darling is a lad, right? A proper lad, right? So he's on the hill getting blind with his mates from Wakery one day, right, during a test match. The Australians had a couple of injuries that day. So the next day, the 12th man was on the ground, but they called up Rick Darling. So the next day, he's on the ground fielding. The day before, he was blind on the hill. That is my kind of guy right there.
What a gun. He's in.
And he was a ripping fieldsman as well, Rick Darling, very sharp in the field. Now, I'm going to get controversial really quick with his opening partner here. I've gone for a bloke who never played a test match for Australia. Ooh. But he would have, at one point, he was the best cricketer in the country. It's just that he was too old by the time we played our first test match, and that's Tom Wills. Tom Wills wrote the rules of AFL football, but was the best cricketer in the colony for his entire life, basically. He pulled together the first Aboriginal touring team that went to the UK. Tom Wills managed that team. But Tom Wills was a roaring pisshead. I reckon it would have been fun to spend a few nights on the town with Tom Wills. He was not opposed, if you believe the biographies, to just smashing a couple of cans before he went out to the bat on an uncovered pitch, if you don't mind, without a helmet, and just knock up a tasty 100. So I've got him at number two. Coming in at first drop, player I loved as a kid. I could have gone Viv Richards, but I figure he comes up too often in your 11s. So I've left him out.
And probably more rum man.
Well, I've gone for a bloke who some might argue doesn't drink, but I'm going to argue that I reckon he's had a couple in his time. Javed Meandad, I'm putting in as my first drop. Yeah. A lot of people didn't like Javed Meandad, but I thought when he raised his bat to Dennis Lilly that day, I just looked at him and I thought, I like this bloke. He's got a bit of fire in his belly.
There's something there.
I liked his angry attitude. I loved the way he batted. And he just had that touch of bad boy flair about him. I got the feeling that if you hung out with Javed off the field, anything's possible. Anything can happen with Javed's man that off the field.
He was kind of a street fighter, wasn't he? A street fighter with the bat. Yeah, he'll look
up. Well, that's right. That's right. So I reckon if you hit the town with Javed, you'd be express entry to nightclubs everywhere. And there'd be a queue of people wanting to come and say hello. So Javed Meandad at three. I just can't avoid this, but I'm going for Boof at number four.
Yep. I was waiting for him to pop up.
Pete, you know Boof well. And you would have definitely had more beers with him than I have. Have you enjoyed his company on those occasions?
Unbelievable beer drinker, old Boof. No, he's great. If you are, but number four, solid position for him. He'll control the innings from there, I think, just nicely.
And after one too many, Pete, did you ever cough down a cheeky dart with Boof as well out behind a dumpster out the back of a pub somewhere?
Oh, he's known to dabble in the odd one here and there, mate. Just sneak off out the back.
You know, one of my favourite Boof stories, and I don't know how public the first half of this story is, so I hope I'm not getting him in trouble, but Boof's last season of first-class cricket coincided with an Ashes tour in Australia. It might have been when we regained the Ashes. It might have been that tour, 2005, 2006, I think. And there was a tour match where England played South Australia at Adelaide Oval, obviously. It was in November of that summer. So they still hadn't finalised the squad, but it was most likely he wasn't going to get picked in our Ashes team. Anyway, Boof goes out the night before that game started, that tour match, and I have it on good authority that he might have had a couple. Then Boof's come out and batted for South Australia, and in one of the great stories, he's hit 99 and has done his... No, he had 90. He had 98. And he ran a single and he tried to make it back for two. And he got run out on 99.
What's he doing going for a quick two?
Of all the people who shouldn't be taking a quick two, it's not only is it Boof, it's a hungover Boof. Shouldn't be taking a quick two. So Boof at number four. Next up, coming in at number five, I've got my cricketing hero as a kid. I had his poster on my wall, and he was a rock star to me, and that's David Hooks coming in at number five. Just that 34 ball ton against Victoria. I listened to that on the radio, and that was just one of the most exciting. It's one of the most exciting things I've ever heard on a radio, David Hooks. And the scoreboard, when Hooksy, I think it was 101 not out, and Rick Darling, who was known for his flair, was on 10. So it was, and they were the two opening batsmen. Hook 101, Darling 10.
And if you haven't,
so Hooksy,
it's on YouTube, Pete. So have a look. It's incredible.
Yeah, I'm checking that out.
Check it out. And it was just, and Hooksy has said later on, he was just annoyed at the pathetic declaration. Like, he felt that Victoria declared to give them no chance. And he was like, oh, yeah, no chance, really? We'll see, dickheads. If he'd stayed in, we would have won that Shield game. Next up, I'm going for a bloke who I loved nearly as much as Viv Richards, and that's Richie Richardson. Oh. I feel like he gets lost in the West Indies conversation because everyone just jumps from Viv to Brian Lara. But Richie Richardson was uber cool for me as well. Didn't wear a helmet either. And just, he just had that nice bit of flair about him as well. I have no idea if he loved a beer. Flem, you might have a bit of insight into that. But I feel like he's just...
No problems. You know, he plays lead guitar in the Dreadheads band, and currently plays bass. Yeah.
There we go. So Richie Richardson, my wicketkeeper, all the way from Afghanistan, Mohammad Shahzad. The bloke is carrying a few kilos.
But I reckon he has a crack.
Coming in next. A bloke who we know is another rock star of cricket is Keith Miller, I'm choosing as my all-rounder. Keith Miller, I especially love Keith Miller for two reasons. One was his famous quote about being asked how he's going to handle the pressure of an Ashes test match. And having just been a fighter pilot in World War II, he said, pressure, try a Messerschmitt flying up your ass. That's pressure. Not batting against England. And the other great thing I love about Keith Miller is my dad, as a 16-year-old, got together in country South Australia with a bunch of cousins, a whole bunch of them, about a dozen of them, piled in the back of a truck in 1947. They drove to Adelaide, which back then took about 6 or 7 hours, to watch Don Bradman play. And the Don, towards the end of his illustrious career, got a bloody duck.
No.
They travelled for half a day to watch the Don get a duck. I think one of three ducks in his career. But Keith Miller hit 142, not out. So thanks, Keith, for putting a smile on my young dad's face back then.
And pretty prolific off the field, Keith. Pretty prolific off the field.
Did some fantastic work, apparently, back in the day. And I think might have knocked around in some Hollywood circles for a while too, if the rumours would be believed. Next up, opening to bowling, I've got Malcolm Marshall. I don't really have any idea what Malcolm Marshall would be like as a bloke, but he was another player who, as a kid, I just loved. I wanted him, even when the West Indies played Australia, I wanted Malcolm Marshall to get 8 wickets and hit a ton in every innings. And he was, and my one of my great frustrations as a kid was Malcolm Marshall was a pretty good batsman.
Yeah.
But I just never, he even never really got the opportunity because they had such a strong batting lineup ahead of him. Or I just felt as though he always threw his wicket away and it annoyed me because I wanted him to make runs as well. Like I wanted him to be a genuine all rounder. But I bloody love Malcolm Marshall. Next up, I was going to pick Phil Tufnell, but I've gone for Daniel Vettori because I wanted to get a Kiwi into my team. A bloke who has glasses and a beard, which is what I'm sporting right now. You can't go wrong. And he just strikes me as a ripping bloke, Daniel Vettori as well.
Do you rate him? Yeah, rate him highly. And the boys that have had a few beers with him before said he's just one of the greats on the cans for sure.
Yeah, great. And my 11th player, I was tossing up. Apologies to Dwayne Lovrock from Bermuda. He was going to be pick 11 for me, but he's my 12th man. Yeah. I picked 130-kilogram Bermudan to be my 12th man. But coming, batting at 11 and opening to bowling, I've picked a guy. His name is Salil Ankola. He's Indian, and I've picked him because, for two reasons. He debuted in November against Pakistan in November 1989. Another player debuted in that same test match. And that was Sachin Tendulkar. So they debuted together. Sachin Tendulkar went on to play 200 test matches for India and become the most famous Indian ever. And I'm including Gandhi in that, right? Salil Ankola went on to play no more test matches. That was it. So I just want to sit down with him and say, mate, are you okay?
Sounds like he needs a beer.
He needs a beer. Interesting fact about him, though, he did go on to win the first ever season of Big Brother in India.
Whoa.
So he's, and then do a bit of acting in India as well. So he's redeemed himself on some level, I guess. But I'd like to chat with him just to see what it's been like for him watching Sachin Tendulkar become the most famous person ever from that day in November 1989. So that's my 11 right there, guys. And also, special mention to Stephen Book, the New Zealand fast bowler. And I love him. My favourite quote ever in cricket. In his last test match, he took one for 229 in his last test. And in that test match, Javed Miandad hit 271 in that test match. And when he was being interviewed afterwards, they said, what was it like bowling out there today? And Stephen Book said, he was asked, what was it like bowling out there today? And he said, it was like bowling in the highlights. which I thought was brilliant. Yeah, me and Dad had a blinder that day. So that's they're the 11 of people I'd love to have a beer with. So these are the 11 of players I hate.
That's a word.
And there's one controversial one in here, which I don't expect either of you to comment on. You can just let it go. I'll go to the next one, okay?
Okay.
It'll be pretty obvious when I say it. But I'm starting, opening the batting, Chris Tavare. 50 runs in 5 hours. Get stuff, Chris. I never want to see you out on a ground ever again. Stop wasting my time. Okay. Coming in at number two, WG Grace. They've come to watch me, not you, he says to the umpires. He refused to leave. Hey, WG, you can get stuffed, my friend. And also, in England, when they survey British journalists about the greatest cricketer ever, often WG Grace is number one ahead of Bradman. Are you fucking kidding me? Okay. So, WG Grace, coming in at number three. Look, there's something about the celebration when he gets a ton that I just can't quite cop. And his apology press conference was one of the worst I've ever seen. And he's Australian. Oh, no. Flip's shaking his head. A lot of Australians listen to this podcast. Don't say it, Lemo. Don't say it. He's a great cricketer. He's an amazing cricketer. He's one of the most exciting I've ever seen. But I just think to myself, cool your jets, son. Come on. You know who it is. All right. I'll say it and I'll quickly go to my number four.
Yep. All right,
David Warner, now coming in at number four. I've got... Now, this bloke, look, he's not with us anymore and I shouldn't get into him, but God, I hated him when he played Hansie Cronje. There was just something about Hansie Cronje. He just had a hateable head, didn't he? Every time I saw him, I wanted him to get no runs. Often, I should have backed him. If I'd backed him for no runs on the right occasions, I could have made some money out of him. But Hansie Cronje at four. Next up at five, Sourav Ganguly. I know you've got a lot of Indian listeners, but seriously, guys, he was a piece of work, Sourav Ganguly. Remember when he flipped the bird to the crowd? You remember? All right, next up, Tony Gregg. I just hated him when he played. Hated him. May well be. You know what? I've met his son, and his son, Mark, is a great bloke. I love his son, Mark. Ripping guy. But Tony Gregg, when he played, hated him. Hooksy hit him for 5 fours in a row, a lifetime highlight, basically.
He did play up to it a bit, though, Tony, didn't he? He used to wave the fours when he hit fours. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got another Australian here. I apologise. But there's Tasmanian fast bowler Greg Campbell. Now... Now, the reason, Pete, you're probably looking at me thinking, what did he ever do? I'll tell you what he did.
Poor bloke.
Adelaide, let me explain, walk through a test match for you, Adelaide Oval. We're going back to about 1989, right? Or it might have been 91 or something like that. Anyway, Australia, Pakistan. First innings, Wasim Akram batting at 7, hits 52. All right? Then Wasim Akram bowls, takes 5 for 100. All right? Then Pakistan bat again. Wasim Akram batting at 7, hits 123. Right? After being smashed all over the park, Greg Campbell gets him out. And then gives him a send-off. Are you kidding me? Are you joking me? He towed you up from day one and you've given him a send-off. So, courtesy of that, I've got a long memory, clearly. Greg Campbell is in my team. Number 8, I've got Harbhajan Singh.
Yep.
I'll never forgive him for the Andrew Simons debacle.
Yep.
Next up, Richard Hadley. Now, this next bloke, according to people I've met, he's a ripping bloke, but I just, and you'll be able to give me a bit of clarity on this, Pete, but I just can't stand him, Stuart Broad. he just annoys the crap out of me. Pete, is he a good bloke?
Off the field. Good bloke on the field. He really, fires you up, gets you real angry.
Oh, and at number 11, now this bloke, I just want to be clear, I would have picked him in all 11 spots if I could have, and that's Andre Nell. Has a bigger flog ever played test cricket? in 150 years, has a bigger flog ever played test cricket?
What got you going about it?
Can anyone answer me that question? It was just that he just had that shit-eating grin on his face all the time, and there was just, I just looked at him and thought, I know you're a wanker. I don't even have to meet you to tell that you're a wanker. Like, I know, like, he would, you know, every time Andre Nell bowled a ball, like an angel died somewhere.
Is he captain?
He is captain, vice captain, all of the above. Wow. But yeah, Andre Nell is in my just those. I think how long did he play for South Africa for, Flem? In fact, you would have met him. What is he like?
I just met him in the IPL. Funny enough, having a beer. Like, if we put him in the beer 11, he was fine.
I bet he's batting it while you weren't looking.
White line fever, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, I never saw him off the ground, so I can't judge his white line fever. But there was just something about his way, and he'd be bouncing number 11s as well. Like, I'm sure he bounced Glenn McGrath on more than one occasion.
That's just not on. What's the fast bowlers? Surely there's a bit of an agreement there, isn't it? Just pitch it up. I won't bounce you. You don't bounce me. But that's pretty poor from old Nelly.
I'm trying to add up the collective booing of your hated 11. It'd be massive. Massive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, there's a lot to not like about some of those players. And as I say, look, any of these guys, you meet them off the ground, they might be amazing blokes. Look, Tony Gregg, from what I hear, is a great guy. I never met him. I don't know. Richard Hadley. Good. Well, you've met Richard Hadley, Flem, plenty of times.
Oh, he's an idol. I love him. and Greg Campbell, that's Ricky Ponting's uncle.
Is it?
Yes.
Right. So the only redeeming feature I could find for Chris Tavare is that his cousin is comedian Jim Tavare. And Jim Tavare is very funny. In fact, Jim Tavare, one of the best heckles ever, Jim Tavare plays a double bass, big double bass, and he lives in London. And he said the best heckle he's ever received was from a kid on the tube. And he said he was going to a gig one night in London, and he's standing on the tube and leaning on his double bass like this. And this kid looks up at him, and then the kid sort of grabs his mum's dress and tugs mum's dress and goes, "Hey, mum, look, a midget with a guitar." That's good gear. Because Jim Tavray is about 6'4", by the way.
We might get you back for the sledging 11, but Limo, Pete, beer 11 versus hate 11, big game.
Oh wow, not even close. Get them on the field and it's beer 11 the entire way there. That was awesome. Great stuff, Limo.
Thank you. I think the beer 11 would have the crowd on their side. All I hope is with the beer 11, there's at least one injury so Dwayne Lovrock from Bermuda can run out and take the field for a while.
Get him on. Get him back in the first sleep.
Yes.
Thanks, Limo.
All right. Thank you, guys. An absolute pleasure.
Thanks, mate.
Andrenel not amused at all. He's trying to stare down Gautam Gambhir, who offered to stare him back in the face, but this is why. Went for the hook, getting the top edge.
Pete, I tell you what, Limo did a great job with those 11s. I reckon those theme 11s are where we're going to go each episode now.
Yeah, I'm liking that. I'll tell you what, he put some work into it. Like, there was some serious research there, and there were about five guys that I'd actually never, ever heard of before. So, that was impressive stuff.
And you might be surprised that they're not all Australian either. You know, like the West Indian players of the 80s, you know, Richie Richardson and Malcolm Marshall, for my age group, they seemed to come out every year. They were so cool. They had the best batsmen, the best bowlers, Geoffrey Dujon, the best wicketkeeper batsman. Like, they were actually loved by the crowd.
Yep. So yeah, I'm not surprised. They were by the Australian crowd. Yeah, they were great. I've been watching a few of the highlights for them that have been replayed at the moment, and they're so cool. Got the flair out there, a bit of personality. It's just great to see.
Fielding like Logie and, you know, Roger Harper was the permanent 12th man, one of the quicks that go off.
Yeah.
And like, he's about 6'5". He seemed to have 8 metre hands, arms.
Serious wingspan, yeah.
He was just amazing. But you know who didn't love him as much? The poor Australian players.
Oh, yeah. I've got no interest in facing those guys. So I feel sorry for the boys that had to front up and take on the big West Indians. That must have been tough.
You're facing them. Like, they had one tour to England, West Indies early 1984. And then guess who come out that summer? Lost 4-0. Guess who come out that summer? The West Indies.
Have some of that. Just a bit of salt into the wounds.
And his passion for the hate 11. A few of those, though, I reckon it's grudging respect.
Yeah.
Isn't it a disliked 11? Like, when it, you know, I remember Sir Richard Hadley growing up. The crowd used to boo him and call him wanker cheers and all that. But it was because he was just an absolute jet. And the modern-day players, you know, like Stuart Broad in Australia or Warner in England, surely that's the same sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you're getting nailed by the crowds or getting songs made about you by the opposition crowd, like, I think that's when you've made it. That's it. You're like, yep, I've done enough to piss these guys off so much that they've resorted to this to try and get under my nerves. So, yeah, it seemed like there was a few guys there that had done that to Limo.
Yeah, that was great work by Limo. But, mate, we're getting near the end of this pod. Just a little bit of trivia here. Mr. Cricket, right? Michael Hussey. Yep. He's in a fantasy AFL league, super coach, set up by Trent Copeland, you know, the former Australian quick on Channel 7 there. It's got, you know, myself, Callum Ferguson, Adam Voges, those type. Mr. Cricket's in it. He's 10th overall in Australia.
In the whole of Australia?
In the whole of Australia. So I think there's 60,000 people playing. It might even be more than that. And if you get first, I think it's 50 grand.
Well, if there's, that's not bad. If if his cricket coaching, doesn't go ahead, maybe he needs to get into a bit of AFL. It's like special comments or something.
Yeah, so where do you see it? I know there's been some talk from our league. When you win a car as the best player of the competition or money, it gets shared to between your teammates. Should Mr. Cricket, if he gets the 50 grand, should it be shared within the league?
I think so, yeah.
I think he's obviously put a team together to try and beat your teams. And without the help of your teams, he wouldn't have put this team together that is now, you know, dominating in Australia. So I think that's fair. If he wins the competition, that should be split evenly between you boys.
No, I like it. I'm with you. Yep. We'll go with that. We'll give you updates of Mr. Cricket's super coach. I think he might be going overseas somewhere. So I hope, at least with the internet, and keep on it. And Pete, thanks a lot again. Thanks to Limo. And to take us out, you know we've got.
What have we got?
The Masked Singer, the Hammerhead himself, Michael Bevan.
Oh,
thanks, Bevan.
Wow. What a lovely catch, Flynn. No, you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.